universal principles for everyone. Now, the difference is, and we're going to see this in a minute in a key verse, the difference is for the Hebrew wisdom literature, it was all focused on the fear of the Lord. It all started there. And we'll see that in just a minute. Here's one more thing I want you to see, though, about the book of Proverbs. And I've got it on the screen. Proverbs expresses general principles, not guaranteed promises. And I want you to get this. Proverbs expresses, expresses general principles, but not guaranteed promises. For instance, how many of you have heard this verse? It's Proverbs 22, verse 6. Proverbs says, train up a child in the way they should go, and in the end they will not depart from it. Is that a principle or is that a promise? It's not a promise. It's a principle. Does that disturb you a little bit? I mean, I wish it was a promise. You know, but think about this. If you're a parent out there and you've done everything you can and your child goes astray, does that mean it's on your head? You messed up because it says train up a child in the way they should go. And when that's not what that means. Adam and Eve had the perfect parent. And look what they did. You know? So, it's a principle. It basically says if you do those things, the odds are way, way better and more probable that this is going to happen. But there's still some free will involved in here, and there's still a fallen nature involved in here, and there's still a fallen world involved in here. So I really want you to hear this in the book of Proverbs. Otherwise, you can go through the book of Proverbs and start hunting and pecking and claiming things as your own, and it may not necessarily work that way. These are principles. These are life principles. These are principles that we're supposed to be living by, not just kind of grabbing at random. So the book of Proverbs is not about finding stuff to hang on to. It's about an ongoing, consistent way of life. That's what the book of Proverbs is about. Okay, so it makes sense? Any questions so far? Anything you want to debate about so far? Because I got a lot of medicine in me. I think I can debate. Yes? Mm-hmm. Exactly. You're exactly right. You can't bring everybody because it goes back to that proverb you used. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. So that's exactly right. And that's what these are. These are principles that you can lead your life by and help lead others by. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sometimes. Sometimes. So, and God honors those prayers. But what I'm, yeah, and you're right. There, people are more apt to come back to Christ if you're praying for them than if you're not praying for them. Those are the principles. Those are kind of these proverb type of principles that says this is the way you should structure your life. Now, I got to tell you, I had a hard time kind of getting my hands around this book to teach. I love the book of Proverbs. I really do. Book of Proverbs and the book of James, those are my two favorite books. And I can camp out in those for a long time. But it's really hard to... Have you ever had your garage that needed to be cleaned out? I mean, it was like full. And you just needed... None of you probably have. Never have. But it's so full, it's like you don't know where to start. And there's things and nooks and crannies and big things and things you had forgotten about and all kinds of cool stuff. And you just get lost in all of it. This is how the book of Proverbs is. There's all kinds of stuff crammed into this book. My biggest agony in going through this book is we're not going to be able to hit every proverb because there's some great ones in here. And so trying to get my hands around it on how to teach it was a little bit tough for me. And I could boil it down to two outlines. The simplest outline would be this. And I'm not real big on outlines, but it kind of gives us a place to grab a hold of and handle. You can outline a book of the Bible however you want to. So there's no right or wrong way to outline it. But I can give you a simple one, and then we'll go through a little more detail. The simple one would be this. You can break it in half, or actually one-third and two-thirds. The first one-third is discourses or speeches about wisdom. And that's the first 9 chapters. So it's about the first third of the book, because there's 31 chapters in there. And then the last two-thirds are these individual parables. So that's a simple, easy way to break it down. And one thing about the book of Proverbs, it's really a great book to study throughout the month, because there's 31 chapters. You can just take one a day. And if you go through that consistently, you will become much wiser than you are now. Or at least potentially become much wiser than you are now. So that's a simple outline. We're going to take a little bit more detailed approach through it tonight. So let's start with an introduction. An introduction in chapter 1. We'll do the first 7 verses. And we can't even think about studying Proverbs without reading these first 7. So let's read them. Proverbs 1, verse 1, starts off with this: the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now, you're going to find out later, Solomon wrote a lot of these. He didn't write all of these. These are not all authored by Solomon. And we'll find that out in a minute. But he kicks off the book here. Let me go back and start again. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Now, here's the purposes: to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord, and here's the key verse, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Did you hear the little parallelism in there? We talked about Hebrew poetry, and there's Hebrew poetry in Proverbs. But we talked about that parallelism. And this is an antithetical parallelism. It's a contrasting parallelism. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's the first thought. And then the second one, fools despise wisdom and instruction. So it contrasts the two thoughts. So it's a little bit of a parallelism in there. So the first purpose of this book is this: to gain wisdom. It says right there in verse 2, purpose of these Proverbs, to know wisdom. All right. So what's your definition of wisdom? How would you define wisdom? Fear of the Lord. Now, that's the Bible answer. Hold the Bible answer off to the end. Just define wisdom for me.
Knowledge.
Okay. Someone else. Yes.
I would say
proper application of knowledge. Okay. Anyone else? Say it again. Responding to life from God's perspective. All right, he gave me a little bit of a Bible answer too, so I'll give you the other one. Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, it is. Somebody else.
Knowing that you have the knowledge.
Knowing that you have the knowledge. Being able to have a starting place. Well, wisdom is knowing God, but how many people know God and aren't very wise? So there's got to be a little bit more to that. Yeah. I know people that make really bad decisions who are believers, but they make really bad decisions. So just knowing God is not enough. That's why Scripture says in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It's a starting place. Right, right. Well, wisdom is kind of like Jack was talking about. It's application. Pardon? True, if you don't know God according to the Hebrew wisdom literature, then you're not going to be walking in wisdom. But knowing God doesn't necessarily mean you're going to act wise. And there is an action component to wisdom, as we're going to see. It's not just what you have here. It's not just your head, but it's your feet. So I know a lot of people who know God. I'm convinced they're saved, but they're making some really poor choices and bad decisions that are not wise. So there's got to be more than just that. I think there's a component of both. I think there's a component of both. Look at how Temper Logman, I came across this in a book called How to Read Proverbs. He looks at his definition. Wisdom is the skill of living. It is practical knowledge that helps one know how to act, here are the two of them, and how to speak in different situations. Wisdom entails the ability to avoid problems and the skills to handle them when they present themselves. Wisdom also, I love this, wisdom also includes the ability to interpret other people's speech and writing in order to react correctly to what they are saying to us. Wisdom is not intelligence, pure and simple. So it's basically saying that there's two components of wisdom, kind of like Jack was talking about. There's these two components that goes together. Now, you'll find all throughout the Proverbs, you'll find a variety of synonyms used for wisdom. You'll find words like discipline and correction and success and insight and understanding and knowledge and discretion and discernment and prudence and righteousness and justice and fairness. All these kind of get used interchangeably with wisdom. But there's two purposes to the book of Proverbs, and since Proverbs is all about wisdom, these two purposes key us in to what wisdom is really about. It's not just to gain wisdom, but it's kind of like Jack was saying, to apply wisdom. The really wise person is the one who not only gains it, but uses it. If you look in, verse 2 again, to know wisdom, that was the first purpose. But if you look at verse 3, to receive instruction in what? Wise dealing. So it's not just getting wise in knowledge, but it's wise in dealing. How many of you have raised children and they were getting ready to make a decision and you said, that's not wise? Right? Okay, of those of you that raised your hand, how many of them went ahead and did it anyway? Right. Now, they knew it wasn't wise. Now, they might not have believed you, but in the long run, they know you're not there to lie to them. They knew it wasn't wise, but they did it anyway. So were they wise? Okay, so you have to have the two components together. Those two components, what you know and then acting out of what you know. Living, as it was said, in the way God wants you to live. There's a great proverb that talks about this. I love this. It's very descriptive. Proverbs 26:7, like a lame man's legs which hang useless is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Just like a lame man's legs are of no use to him, the fool who has a proverb and doesn't use it is no use to him either. So it's not enough, as we always say in here, it's not enough to just come in and cram stuff into your head because all you get is a fat head. You have to work it out through your feet. You have to have both of those. Proverbs are only complete and only rightly applied when we apply them to ourselves and to others and to our situation. So a proverb is not complete until you apply it. All right? So, say, yes.
Job 12:12.
Wisdom is with the aged, and understanding in the length of days.
Wisdom is with the aged, and understanding, yeah. So puff up a little bit, those of you that will claim to be aged. So, I don't know, though. You know, I think that, for me, that's one of those principles. That's one of those principles. Because the older I get, the dumber I feel. You know? I was that way when I went to seminary. When I went to seminary, I thought I knew everything. And I got to seminary, and I found out I didn't know anything. So, I know some really wise old people, and I know some really foolish old people. So I wish it worked that way, but, you know. Well, I can turn around, but that won't work. So the purpose, for who's it written? It's written for a wide variety of people, really. It's written for people in general. The book of Proverbs is written for people in general. It's not just for the Hebrews. It's written for people in general. It's written for the immature. It's also written for the mature. You can see this where it says, verse 4, give prudence to the simple, the immature. Knowledge and discretion to the youth, those that are a little further along the way. Let the wise hear and increase their learning. So Proverbs is for everybody. But who is it not for? It's kind of a trick question. It's a matter of semantics. It really is for everybody, but it's really not going to be useful for those who are not teachable. If you're not teachable, Proverbs is still for you, but if you're not teachable, it's not going to help. Yes, fools despise wisdom. They're not teachable. They won't listen. They won't. I mean, you've had that before. You may have worked with somebody. We'll try to let your kids off the hook this time. You probably have worked with somebody where you've talked to them and they're going to hunt. Yep. And you see that the lights are on, but no one's home. You know, they're acting like they're tracking with you, but then they just don't do it. And if that happens long enough, you look at a person like that and you say, you know, they're not teachable. And that's one thing you'll find out throughout the book of Proverbs is it talks a lot about the fool who's not interested in God, fool who doesn't believe there's a God, fool who's not interested in learning, fool who wants to do his own way, his own thing. And face it, all of us can fit into that a little bit. How many times do we know God's telling us to do something? We kind of want to do something different. Well, that's foolish on our part. And so Proverbs begins to link that out. And you brought up Psalm 1:7. That is the key verse. That is the key verse. That's the theme verse for this whole book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And knowledge and wisdom here are used interchangeably. Excuse me. They're used interchangeably here. It's a couplet. It's a parallelism. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, then the counter parallelism. The fools despise wisdom and instruction. So those two are interchangeable. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning. It's the starting place for wisdom. It's the starting place for wisdom. What is it? Paul talks about God confuses the foolishness of men, you know, because the starting place is not the fear of the Lord. So if you're going to get something out of Proverbs, you got to go all the way back to Job and realize the nature of God, that he's sovereign and that he's supreme and that he's God way above our understanding, way above our knowledge, and that we're not. And we can debate all we want to, but it's not going to help us. We got to get that in. Now, that doesn't mean we can't let out how we feel about things, because Psalms taught us that. We can let out those feelings, and God will listen to those emotions and help us through those emotions. But when you get to Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning point of being wise. So, that's the introduction for the outline I'm going to use. So, let's go to the next point. In the rest of chapter 1, all through chapter 9, there are these 7 discourses or speeches about wisdom. There's 7 of them. Many of them talk about wisdom as if she's a lady. Which is really interesting if you plot that through the book of Proverbs. Really interesting. So ladies, you kind of get a boost here. You know, you can get past that whole Garden of Eden thing. Now you get to be the wisdom person in Proverbs, right? Unfortunately, all through Proverbs, you hear about the adulterous woman too. So you kind of have counterparts going through there. So you got to pick one of them. But each of these 7 discourses, and you know there's 7 because they each start with a father addressing his son. These 7 discourses each start with a father addressing his son. For instance, if you look at verse 8, chapter 1, verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teaching. This launches the first discourse or the first speech about wisdom. And so I'm going to take you kind of quickly through these 7 discourses. We can't get into all of them and dig deep into all of them, but we're going to look at them so you kind of get a feel for what this is. And I've just given some names to them. If you read commentaries or even in your Bible, it may even label them differently. But the first discourse that starts in this verse I just read is a discourse about two voices. There are two voices in this first discourse. It starts off in verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching. And then he goes on, and if you get down to here, it says, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. Now listen to the voices. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them up alive. And it goes on and talks about what these people say, these voices say. And then in verse 15, he says, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths. So that's the first voice. Now, the contrasting voice starts off in verse 20. So there's these people that are saying, hey, come with us, lie in wait for blood with us. Hey, let's ambush these people. Hey, let's do this. And then in verse 20, there's this other voice. Wisdom cries aloud in the streets. In the market, she raises her voice, and the heads of the noisy streets, she cries out. And at the entrance of the city gate, she speaks. So you hear the two different voices? So the psalmist right off the bat is saying, okay, you have these voices of these sinners, and they're interested in all this short-term gratification, getting what they want, how they want, when they want it. And in the end, you'll find out that they receive exactly what they dole out. It may take them a while. It may look like they're winning. It may look like they're getting ahead. But the proverb says that in the end, they get exactly what they were doling out. What goes around comes around. But then, starting in verse 20, you have this voice of wisdom. Now, I want you to notice an interesting thing about the voice of wisdom. The voice of wisdom is not hiding. Proverbs makes this really clear. The wisdom cries out in the streets. In the market, she raises her voice. She's at the head of the noisy street. She's at the entrance of the gates. Wisdom, basically, the proverb is saying, wisdom is everywhere if you'll just look and just listen. It's not being hidden. It's not like it can't be found. It's not like God is playing a magic trick saying, okay, which cup is it under? No, it's out there everywhere. And our lack of wisdom is more about our refusal of wisdom. Let that sink in for a minute. Our lack of wisdom is not really about a lack of wisdom. It's about a refusal of wisdom. For instance, I know consuming large amounts of candy is not good for me. I know that. My doctor has made it clear to me that it's not good for me. I get this little lecture every time I go in about the stuff I eat. Have I changed? It's not that I'm not wise enough to understand. I'm refusing the wisdom. And it has consequences. But it's not like I don't know what to do. It's not like the wisdom's not there. It's not like I can't grasp it. I'm just refusing it. You could say the same thing about your health. You could say the same thing about your finances. You could say the same thing about a lot of things. You know, wisdom is there for the taking, but our problem is more often than not, we refuse it. So the message is, you must choose which voice you're going to listen to. Look at the end of the chapter. Verses 32-33. For the simple are killed by their turning away. Hear it? They're turning away. They're not killed because they don't understand wisdom. They're not killed because they can't get wisdom. They're killed because of their turning away. And the complacency of fools destroys them. Complacency, they don't do anything about what they know to do. Then verse 33, but whoever listens to me will dwell securely and will be at ease without dread of disaster. So it's really about a choice of these two voices. There's this voice of the people that say, hey, come with us, let's do what we want to do, let's get what we want to get, let's live for the now, let's just worry about ourselves right now. And then there's other voice that's out in the street calling for a different way, and we have to choose between those two. Note again, Verse 33, but whoever listens to me will dwell secure and will be at ease without dread of disaster. That is a principle. That is not a promise. You know how I know that? Any ideas? Pardon? Experiences in your own life. But think about biblical characters. I mean, think about Moses. Moses listened to God, did exactly what God told him to do. After some convincing, did exactly what God told him to do. And God tells him to go back to Egypt and face Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let my people go because I'm going to rescue the people through you. So Moses finally caves in. He says, okay, I'll do it. He goes. He talks to Pharaoh, tells him exactly word for word what God said that he was to say. And Pharaoh made it harder. Moses' own people wanted to crucify him. They hated him. It got worse when he did what he was supposed to do. So this has got to be a principle, not a promise. Jesus did exactly what his father told him to do. And look how it turned out for him, at least for 3 days. John the Baptist. So it's really not wise to pull stuff out of here and say, this is going to happen because God said it would. God is God. Remember, we went through this in Job. God will do things because his game plan is so far ahead of ours, we can't even conceive it sometimes. It's only in the aftermath that we can look back and go, oh, that's what he was doing. I mean, he did some stuff in my life in the process of getting me here that made no sense whatsoever. I mean, it just looked flat out stupid. Now, when I look back, I can see all the dominoes and I can see how they fit. But we can't do that, so we cannot claim every promise in here as a promise. A lot of things are principles in here. Okay? So those are the two voices. The next discourse. The value of wisdom. This is chapter 2. So you finish out chapter 1 with the two voices, and then you get to chapter 2. Chapter 2 is about the value of wisdom. And it basically is telling us that we need to pursue wisdom the way we pursue money, the way we pursue our investment, the way we pursue stuff. Look at verses 1 through 4. My son, if you receive my words and treasure, listen to the words it uses, kind of poetic, treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understand. Yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as if it was hidden treasure. Hear the imagery. Again, just because we're out of Psalms doesn't mean you're still not getting Hebrew poetry here. And it's basically saying, you remember the old Scrooge McDuck cartoons? I'm taking a big risk with this one, so somebody tell me you remember. The old Scrooge McDuck, what Scrooge McDuck used to love to do is to go into his vault and go swimming in the piles of money. And he would light up at the thought of going to his vault. Proverbs right here is saying, this is how you and I should be about wisdom. This is how you and I should be about wisdom. We should desire it more than all these other things. Why? Because of its benefits. Look at verse 5. Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. If you go down here, you'll find words like wisdom and shield and guarding the path and watching over the way, righteousness, justice, and equity. These are the benefits of pursuing wisdom. And they start internally first. And some of them spill out externally, but they start internally first. This is why you should value wisdom. Not for what it gets you in the immediate, but for what it gets you down the road, for the eventual outcome of life. So that's the values of wisdom. That's the second discourse. Third discourse, there are commands and blessings of wisdom. The commands and blessings. This is chapter 3. Look at some of the commands in chapter 3. Start in verse 3. It starts off again, every one of these discourses start off, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching. So that's how you know we're starting a new speech here. And then you get down to verse 3, let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. There's command 1. Look at verse 5, Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. It's a great verse. Then there's another command, verse 7. Be not wise in your own eyes. And then there's another command, verse 9. Honor the Lord with your wealth. And then verse 15 and or 11, another command. Do not despise the Lord's discipline. I would like to have left that one out of this list, actually. You know, I was doing good until it got down to discipline. And then realizing God's going to discipline us and we're not to despise that. Those are some of the commands listed. And then it switches to some blessings. Look at verse 13. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom. And then it goes on to talk about long life and riches and honor and pleasantness. Remember, these are principles, but it's basically saying follow these commands and the natural outgrowth of that will be more blessing, certainly than cursing. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Then you have some more commands of wisdom. Wisdom's a taskmaster. I'm just telling you, wisdom is not something that just falls in your lap. Wisdom is not something, somebody waiting to hold out a golden apple. Wisdom is a taskmaster, and it makes demands on our lives. And so it has commands. So we get commands, then we get some blessings, and then we get some more commands. Look at the commands. They sound a lot kind of like the Old Testament, kind of like the Ten Commandments a little bit. Look at verse 21. My son, do not lose sight of these. Look at verse 25. Do not be afraid of sudden terror. Verse 27. Do not withhold good from those to whom it's due. Verse 28. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come again tomorrow and I will give it. When you have it to give with you. When you have it with you. Verse 29, do not plan evil against your neighbor. 30, do not contend with a man for no reason. 31, do not envy a man of violence. So you have these list of commands, do not commands. And then it's followed by a blessing. Look at verse 35. The wise will inherit honor, but fools get disgrace. You know what this reminds me of? How many of you ever went through boot camp? Okay? There's a lot of demands on you when you went through boot camp, right? And you probably didn't feel like the benefits were that great at the time. And yet everybody I talk to that has come through boot camp or even the heavy-duty Marine Corps version of, they come out telling me what they got out of it on the end, on the other end. And all the things they learned. Wisdom is like this. I wish wisdom was open up the present and there's the puppies, you know. But wisdom is not like that. Wisdom is this taskmaster and you have to walk according to wisdom, like the drill sergeant, if you will. And when you do, it's hard. But it pays off in the end. And you have to wait for the end. So, let me give you another one. A father's plea to his son. This is chapter 4. Chapter 4, a father's plea to his son. Starts again with the same kind of formula. Hear, O sons, a father's instruction. Be attentive that you may gain insight. So he's setting him up, saying this is important. And he asked him, first of all, to keep and apply the father's instruction. To keep implying the father's instruction. Wisdom, basically. Then he talks about the value of wisdom above everything else. And if you'll notice when you go through these discords, sometimes they start to sound like they're repeating themselves a little bit. But it's because he's drilling a point in. If you've ever said to your children, how many times have I told you? That means you've told it to them more than once. And why? Because you're trying to drill it into them. And you'll see this in Proverbs. And so he's talking about the value of wisdom. He's talking about steering clear the path of the wicked. You can find that starting in verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked and do not walk in the way of evil. This is a theme you hear all through the book of Proverbs. And it's about conscious choice, about which path you're choosing. You're told to guard your heart. One of my favorite verses, verse 23. Keep your heart, some of your translations say guard your heart. Keep your heart with all vigilance. It means don't let up. Don't let down your guard when it comes to your heart. For from it flows the springs of life. And so, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to keep your guard up on your heart so things don't get out? That was a question. In case I didn't have the right inflection on the end. Are you trying to, when it says guard your heart or keep your heart with all vigilance, are you trying to keep the stuff from getting out of it? Yeah, trying to keep it from coming in. Exactly. Because, why? It goes on to say, from it flows the springs of life. If you let pollutants into the spring that feeds your water system, what happens? Everybody gets sick. There's an old story, I don't have time to tell it, but about the keeper of the spring. First time I heard that story, Frank Page told that story. I never forgot it. And I'm just going to leave you with that. But basically the principle of the story is that if you quit guarding the spring and keeping trash out of it, if you quit doing that, then trash starts to flow out of it. So it's a great verse. So he talks about guarding your heart. And then he talks about staying on the path of wisdom. Look at verse 25. Let your eyes look directly forward and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the paths of your feet. Then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. Keep your path focused. Keep your eyes focused. My wife tells me this every time we walk by the Apple store. Every time, just keep walking, just look ahead, just keep going straight because I'm always doing this. It's the same principle. It's the same principle. So these are the father's pleas to his son to keep and apply his wisdom, to value wisdom above everything else, to steer clear of the paths of the wicked, to guard his heart, and to stay on the path of wisdom. Then there's this warning. Starts in chapter 5, goes about halfway through chapter 6. The father's warnings to his son. There's this warning against adultery and a call to marital faithfulness. This is a repeating theme in Proverbs. It's a repeating theme. We'll kind of glance over this one. We'll go to another one here that's going to be coming up. But it's this warning against adultery. It starts in the very beginning. And it says in verse 2, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. 3, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's as bitter as wormwood. And then it goes on to talk about that. And so remember, these are instructions of a father to a son. These are the things that the father wants the son to know about life. He's setting him up for life. Consequently, we're being set up for life too. And he's saying, this is a pitfall. This is a trap. If you go down this way, this is what's going to happen. And it's a trap for young men. It really is. In our day and age, it's pornography and it's a million other things like that. But the father is saying, this is my warning to you. If you're going to avoid the pothole, this is the pothole to avoid. And then he talks about the follies. He talks about 4 practical warnings in verse 4. Chapter 6. He gives them 4 practical warnings. He says, chapter 6, verse 1, my son, if you put up security for your neighbor, have given your pledge for a stranger, if you are snared in the words of your mouth, caught in the words of your mouth, then do this, son, and save yourselves. For if you've come into the land of the hand of your neighbor, go and hasten and plead urgently with your neighbor. In other words, if you said, oh yeah, I'll cover that loan for you, run, get out of that deal. So there's a warning about loans. There's a warning about laziness in verse 6 of chapter 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. You know this story. Consider her ways and be wise. Notice it said her ways. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having a chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. So there's a warning about laziness. So you have a warning about loans. You have a warning about laziness. Verse 12, you have a warning about a lack of honesty. A worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eyes, and signals with his feet, points with his fingers. Dishonesty. And then you have a warning about basically a lack of holiness. And this is where many of you have heard this passage. Look at verse 16. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are abominations to him. Haughty eyes, pride, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and in case none of us were caught by the previous ones, one who sows discord among his brothers. And we could pretty all find ourselves in one of those somewhere, you know? Where none of us are exempt from these things. And so that's a warning about a lack of holiness. So it's interesting that this father follows up this warning about adultery with these things. Now think about it. Why would he follow up a warning about adultery with these four warnings? Well, they all fall into it. Basically, I mean, the loans is a little hard to see, but basically you're borrowing something that's not yours and you're going to pay for it. You know, laziness. Adultery is lazy. It may seem like the right thing in the moment, but it's lazy because it's harder to stay and work than what you have. A lack of honesty. It's a lack of holiness. So the father is saying, son, these are the pitfalls. These are the things you got to watch for. All right. Then there's this. There's one more warning. Here's the next one. Another warning against adultery. And you find that in chapter 6, starting in verse 20. And you get the idea that this adultery thing's a big deal. I mean, it just keeps coming up and keeps coming up. There's some great verses in here. And like verse 27, can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? That's very graphic imagery. Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will be unpunished. You know, verse 25 says, do not desire her beauty. You can go to James 1:14 and find out a lot about that desire piece. And then he tells this story. When you get into chapter 7, he tells this story. Verse 6, for I looked out the window of my house, and I looked out through my lattice, and I have seen some of the simple, and I perceived among the youth a young man lacking sense. And he tells this whole story, passing along the streets near her corner. He's in the wrong place. Taking the road to her house in the twilight of the evening. He's in the wrong time. And so he just tells this story about this young man, this foolish, this simple young man that just kind of aimlessly wanders in to this pit, if you will. And so this is another story about the follies of adultery. The benefits of wisdom and the follies of adultery. All right, I'm going to squeeze this last one in and then we'll go and then we'll be done with the discourses. The last one is this. There are two enticing calls. Two enticing calls. There's the call of this adulteress in chapter 7, my son. And this is where the story is at. There's this call of the adulteress. And then there's the warning. You can find the warning in verse 24. And now, O son, listen to me and be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths. For many victims she has laid low, and all her slain are a mighty throng. Her house is a way to Sheol, meaning hell, and going down to the chambers of death. So you have this first enticing voice of this adulteress who's calling to this guy. Hey, come this way. My husband's out of town. He's taking a lot of money. He's going to be gone for a long time. I have these great sheets on my bed, and she's just laying it on thick. This is an enticing voice. And then you get the call of wisdom, chapter 8. Listen to the juxtaposition here. Does not wisdom call? Does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand. Beside the gate and in front of the town, the entrance of the portal, she cries aloud. To you, O men, I call, my cry to the children of man. It's in counter distinction to the cry of the adulteress. And it goes on to talk about this cry being the foundation for creation itself. If you look at verse 22, the Lord possessed me, speaking of wisdom, at the beginning of his work, at the first of his acts of old. Ages ago I was set up, at the first, before the beginning of the earth. Wisdom is basically saying, wisdom is foundational. It's part of creation. And so what is the proverb trying to tell us here? He's trying to say you have two options. You always have two options. You have the option of wisdom, and you have the option of doing what you want. Because it's not always the same thing. And both are calling to you. Neither one is hidden. Both are crying out. The question is, which one do you look for and which one do you listen to? And which one do you follow? Listen to the final admonition of all of these discourses, and then we'll be done. Starting in verse 32. And now, O sons, listen to me. Blessed are those who keep my ways, speaking of wisdom. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not neglect it. Blessed is the one who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting beside my doors, and whoever finds me finds life and obtains the favor from the Lord. But he who fails to find me injures himself. Notice that phrase. He injures himself. And all who hate me love death. So you spent the first third of the book of Proverbs setting up this juxtaposition between the wise and the foolish, between the adulteress and the lady of wisdom. And basically saying both are just as equally vocal in your life. The question is, which one will you pay attention to? Which will you follow? And the reason this is so important to set this up is because now, when we get into all of these individual proverbs, you've been duly warned. That's how that works. All right? So we'll get into those individual proverbs next week. Let's pray. Father, I'm grateful for this evening. I'm thankful for your word. I love this book, Father, but I'm afraid I probably love it more than I practice it, which is kind of ironic, to say the least. Probably hypocritical is a better word, Father. To say I love this book and then not practice it as much as I should is hypocritical. And God, that's what I'm asking for us in this room, that we would get to the place where when we hear you speak, we would just do. Even if it's hard, even if we don't understand, we would just do, and we would choose wisdom. Even though our flesh and our hearts and our minds may want something else, we would choose to listen to wisdom. And that we would know you better for it. We know that wisdom starts with knowing you. And I pray, Father, that we would reassert that knowledge as the beginning point of our wisdom, but we would grow in acting that out. And we ask for that in Jesus' name. Amen.